when I go run, sometimes I don't feel like going running, and people see you, oh, great to see you here. It's awesome that you ran and you inspired us. You know, sometimes it's about pitfalls. You know, when you have a pitfall, you encourage others without knowing you. They read about you and they hear about you and says, hey, I was having a tough day, and you encourage me to get out of the door. You inspire me to do a marathon. I know if you, I don't have to win, but I can finish a marathon. So being a runner is pretty evident for me that, you know, you run to people who you have touched, even though you didn't realize you were doing it.
All right, welcome back, or welcome to the Finding Mastery podcast. I'm Michael Gervais, and I trade in training. I'm a sport and performance psychologist, as well as the co-founder of Compete to Create. And the whole idea behind these conversations is to learn from people who have committed their life efforts towards mastery. Now, what does that mean? It means that we want to understand the framework that they've built upon, their psychological framework, how they organize their inner world to be able to flourish and express their craft at the highest level. We also want to dig to understand the mental skills that they've used to build and refine that craft. And then the subtext of these conversations is really about mastery of craft and or mastery of self. Finding Mastery is brought to you by listening. This is exactly what their app does. It helps you listen to books and content that you might not be able to sit down and actually have the time to read. There was a time early in my career where I remember sitting in the back hallways of my university and being in the library for hours, reading all of the sports psychology literature and research that I could get my hands on. I loved it. I cherished it. The field of sports psychology is just absolutely on a bender right now. It is growing so fast. It is nearly impossible to keep up with all of the research that's coming out. So that's why I love what listening is doing. It's a game changer for me. So the listening app, it lets me listen to anything that's in writing while I'm on the go. Everything from academic papers to books, PDFs, web pages, articles, anything that I put in their app, it reads it to me. It narrates to me. And plus their AI is great. The way that the interface sounds, like, of course, it's not a human that's reading, but it kind of, the AI is so good of what they're doing. It just works. And then there's also this note-taking function. They know that people like us like to take notes. And so it's as simple as when I hear a key idea, I instantly press a button and that section is saved. They've done a really nice job with this product and they've got a great offer for us. Usually they only give a 2-week trial, but because you are listening to Finding Mastery, you get a whole month for free. Check that out, a whole month for free. So I want to encourage you to go check it out. listening.com/findingmastery or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get started. Again, it's listening.com/findingmastery. Or use the code FINDINGMASTERY at checkout to get 1 month completely free. Finding Mastery is brought to you by Hims. Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing simple, convenient, and affordable access to science-informed treatments for erectile dysfunction, known as ED. They also are servicing hair loss, weight loss, and more. Health struggles like ED, they're common, but they can be hard to talk about when it comes to finding a solution. That's why Hims has been a game changer for so many men. The entire process is 100% online. Answer a series of questions on their site, and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option for you. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free in a discreet package. No waiting rooms, no pharmacy visits, and no insurance is needed. Plus, you can manage your plan directly on the Hims app. You can track progress and learn more about your conditions and how to treat them from leading medical experts. If you or a loved one has been struggling with ED, I really want to encourage you to go check out Hims. I know ED often has a psychological component to it as well. So be sure that you're stacking some psychological best practices into your daily routine. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/findingmastery. That's Hims, HIMS.com/findingmastery for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/findingmastery. Disclaimer, hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. Okay, this week's conversation is with Meb Kaflezi, the only runner in history to win the Boston Marathon, the New York City Marathon, and an Olympic medal. Known all over the world by his first name, Meb is a four-time Olympian and history's oldest marathoner to qualify for the U.S. Olympic team. Meb was born in the East African nation of Eritrea, a land torn by war at the time that he was born. So he arrived in Southern California at age 12 without knowing a word of English. And then through running, he attracted national attention and eventually earned a scholarship to UCLA, where he won four NCAA titles. Meb understands winning. He understands the process of becoming. The crowning moment of Meb's career came on April 21st, 2014, at the Boston Marathon. And this was right after the year where there was terrorist attacks. And this patriotic victory that he had, I mean, it was the first for an American man to win since 1983. And it sparked just an avalanche of media and celebration about who he was and what he's done. Even President Barack Obama placed a phone call into Meb just hours after the race. It was this beautiful thing. I remember it exactly where I was when it happened. Today, Meb is Runner's World Magazine's most influential person in running. What becomes apparent in this conversation is how clear Meb is, both the way that he organizes his thoughts and his framework for living. We touch on the importance of gratitude and hard work and clear goals, embracing challenges, and all the stuff, including his spiritual framework, that you would just assume people would have. But he, not only does he understand it, but he lives it. And that's a really important thought, that there's a difference between people who are clear about their core principles and who back into living in alignment with those. Meb has that. And this is a call out to as many of you that might be listening, like, am I doing that myself? If you're not sure, you're not doing it, because it's really hard. First, to know your core principles, and then the back in and day out commitment to those principles. And sometimes that comes at great cost. And we touch on all of this. And with that, let's just jump right into this conversation with Meb. Meb, how are you?
I'm good, Michael. Thanks for having me.
So right out of the gates, you're really intense, aren't you?
I am, actually. It has a good quality and a bad quality. It depends where you are.
Okay. So what are the, and most, like for most of us, our great strengths become double-edged swords. And so for you, what is the good part? What's the hard part about being intense?
The good part of intense is when you are have a goal, you can pursue it, and you know you're gonna. There's no nothing that can stop you. You know, resilience, persistence, dedicated, committed. But the bad thing is that sometimes you think everybody functions that way, and you know we in the world know that that's not always the case. So I definitely have, especially when with kids and stuff, I have to tone it down. You know, because I have the same desire to do great things. Not that everybody doesn't do, but at the same time, there's time and place for it.
That's really cool. And when you say do great things, how do you differentiate between being great and doing great things?
They kind of go parallel to each other. I mean, be great is sometimes, is, you know, talent can take you to some things, but doing great is overcoming the challenges you face and not give up. Because talent can take you to a certain level and you can get away, and sometimes it leads to greatness. But doing something great or greater is being able to keep coming back when setbacks happen, because, you know, even great ones do have setbacks.
Mm. And you've earned resiliency, like your history and your life, you've definitely earned it now. And so when I was doing some research on your story and what you've been able to do, and your autobiography is phenomenal. And so some of the things early days is that you had to escape, you know, Ethiopian soldiers and massacres at an early age.
You know, it was growing up in Eritrea, where I was born, and third world country in the Horn of Africa. Day to day was unpredictable. You don't even know what the next week holds for you, apart from survival instincts and, you know, soldiers trying to capture the old ones, the Ethiopian soldiers, that is, capture old ones and give you a gun and be ready to be trained. If you look like 12 years or older, you're ready to go. And fortunately for me, I was not that age yet. I was 8 and a half, 9 year old, but my oldest brothers, they had to escape from that dilemma. So they have to hide in the cactus. They have to hide in the bushes, because in the villages, you hear noises or you hear people work, say they're coming. And, you know, and you got to react. And so from that soldier, and then also famine and drought and hunger was pretty difficult to be. And, you know, it's not like in the United States, I try to describe it the best that I can, but, you know, third world country, you got to harvest, you got to plant the seeds, you got to hope it rains. So you got to, once it rains, you have to, the weed separate from the good seeds, and eventually cut them off, put them in a circle, look like cement, where you have to run it with oxen, and then you separate the seed from the haze, and then you have to store it or cook it, you know. And here at the grocery store, most people, we go and grab our bread and bagels, and we're ready to go. It's already pre-made. But their survival really is. And, you know, for me, school was not an opportunity for everybody. So if you're lucky enough, you go to school. If not, you got to be a shepherd, you know, taking care of cattle, cows, or sheep and goats. So it was a very humble beginning. It's you and nature and survival at its best. But my parents understood the value of education, even though my dad only has seventh grade education and my mom never went to formal school. So my dad was wanted by the Ethiopian soldiers, so he has to walk over 225 miles to Sudan, and leaving behind six kids and a wife. So it was literally, like I said, just survival and do what you can and to try to provide a better life for you and your family. And but fortunately, he made those journeys, and after 5 years of separation, we got united in Italy. I was 10 year old and ran to him and I said, "Daddy." And he goes, "Marhawi," which is my youngest brother, who is 4 years younger. And I guess, you know, when you have that difference, you haven't seen your kid for 5 years, you don't know which one is which. So I said, "No, it's Meb." And he kind of just went to tears. He's like, "I was expecting you to be taller, bigger and whatnot." And my mom was just worried, you know, we make the flight, you know, because the first time getting on the flight, and says, "No, don't worry about their waist and heights. Let's make sure that all six of them are hurt," because for her has been a big burden, not having the language and first time flying and different culture.
Oh my God. Meb, I mean, you know, like what a, this doesn't happen to me, but I'm lost for how to respond to what you just shared. And I know that you've said it almost clinically, you know, hundreds and thousands of times about your childhood. And when I think about my son, who's a similar age that you were, and, you know, the luxury that he has of growing up, and I think about what it was like for you, it all, I don't know, it just changes me just listening to it. So first out of the gates, I want to say thank you. And, you know, I don't even know, like, I have a hard time trying to imagine what it was like. And I bet at the same time, you would have a hard time trying to imagine what it was like for me, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. You know, you have kids, I have kids, and then it's kind of like, okay, this kind of shaped me who I am. Now, you know, they got computers, they got, like, we have multiple TV in the house.
So I mean, you must be like a crazy man, like, well, you know, yeah. When your kids are too much on the computer, whatever.
I said, don't complain. You ain't got no room to complain.
And they say, "Dad, come on, everyone has one." And you go, "Son, like, I never had anything. What are you talking? I didn't have shoes. What are you talking about?"
Yeah, like, I talk to my kids about, is it one, is it a necessity, or is it a need? You know, is it a, if it's a need, I'm fine. You need it, I will buy you. If you want, then, you know, it's a luxury. So you have to distinguish between the two.
How do you do it? Like, you have completely built a new model of parenting, because most people get handed a model, right? Which is why many people don't leave the socioeconomic status that they were born into. There's a model, it's comfortable, and people don't test it. They think they do, but they play it just the way that they've been taught. And so you've basically been given an instrument at an early age, and you flip it upside down, forward, backwards, restrung it, created something new, added to it, and you've got a completely new instrument that you're playing, as I'm mixing metaphors here. So how have you done this new parenting way? How are you doing it? Maybe is a better way to say it.
Well, a lot of help from my wife here, Danos, but at the same time, humbleness. You know, my parents taught us to be humble, and money comes, money goes, you know, but be there for each other, support each other, encourage each other. So when you don't have enough food, and you share with your brothers and siblings, or when you don't have clothes, you share with your brothers and sisters, and, you know, whatever somebody, I mean, I didn't do it, but my younger siblings, they would sometimes one woman wear it on Monday, the other one wear it on Wednesday, and the other one would wear it on Friday, you know, the clothes they exchange because they didn't have enough. So, but now as a parent, it's different because, you know, our parents worked hard so we can have a better chance or better opportunity than they did. But now, to your credit, is when you have that same luxury you provide for your kids at, and at a snap of a finger or at a www.com, you can order whatever you need or want and whatnot. So how do you refrain from that? And that's a very difficult challenge to a lot of parents. My parents always say, provide for your kids, but don't spoil them. And sometimes, it's, even though it might sound difficult, I don't mind saying no to them. You know, just hoping that it's not like they can't have a phone. They don't have a phone yet. The oldest one is 13, 11, and 9. You know, most of their teammates, I say, well, I'm not their parents. But I don't want them to have a phone. Once they have a phone, that dialogue goes away. Would it be convenient sometimes to text her, hey, I'm 10 minutes late, or I'll meet you on this end and things like that? Yeah, sure. But, you know, I think when you go to high school, I think it's important. We'll hopefully we'll give her one and stuff like that. But other than that, it's just, you know, be a provider, be keep them humble as much as they can. Jordanus and I took them for 2 months to Eritrea just to show their heritage and their roots, but also the people, how people are, you know, they have holes here. You know, having a hole in your jeans or your sweater and stuff like that is fashion. There is desperation. They don't have any change of clothes. That's what it means. It's been used. So it's kind of humor because sometimes, you know, fashion come out of that. But at the same time, it's, I was talking to somebody just yesterday. I said, you're paying for those jeans. It has less on them and you pay more for them. But people don't have those luxuries to have a second pair of jeans. They don't have second pair of a sweater and things like that. It's whatever they have, they wear for a week long or until it gets old, until then parent goes to a city and get them a new one if they can afford it.
Okay, how do you teach humility as one of the core principles that you're working on, you know, passing through your family? How do you teach it? Like, what is? How do you organize your life and your words to be able to teach humility?
Well, I think the best way to do it is, you know, show them how fortunate they are. When you see people struggling on the streets, show them, you know what, education is important. You know, we want to provide the best thing for you. You might think you know it all, but you don't. Nobody knows it all. And, you know, by showing them respect and adversity is good. Sometimes you don't want to overdo it, but challenges, sometimes you want to learn from other people, but you also want to learn from yourself experience. And like I said earlier, we'd made a trip to Eritrea. And when I was in Rio Olympics in 2016, I wasn't there. I was busy getting ready, but my wife said she had to come to some really not kind of poor area in some areas in Brazil, show them that whatever you go in the world, there's people who are in need. So be grateful for what you have. Be great that the opportunities that are provided for you, don't waste them. Try to take advantage of them and be a good humanitarian and be a good servant to others and respect your parents, respect your elders. And, you know, manners are very important in our household, both my wife and I. So we try to teach those things to them and hopefully, you know, and obviously, introduce them to God and for us to be humble and loving and caring for each other.
You know, people ask that question to me a bunch, like, okay, well, how do you train something, you know, on the psychological side? And for some skills, they are mechanical. Like, it is mechanical to train confidence or arousal regulation. There are very clear practices that you can put in place to do that. And then the other stuff, the more esoteric, the principles and the philosophies that guide thoughts and words and actions, it's not complicated. It's like, know what those principles are and then, you know, like, be aware of them. And when you have an opportunity, reinforce it, talk about it, shape it. And it sounds like you just you're doing what I would imagine is that you infuse it in your daily living.
I mean, you guys have a lot more psychology and terms for them, but at the same time, action is for me what, you know, what the sport of running have taught me is action speaks louder than words. You know, you can't be bragging, and because the marathon always keeps you humble. And at the same time, just understand that without action, there's no accomplishments. So how big, how small, you have to set goals. When you set those goals, you work toward them. When you work, you are putting your mind and body into action. And then if you do that, you know, you might not reach for the stars, but you can definitely go on the cloud. So it depends, you know, and then eventually you will reach for the stars, but you have to have the stepping stone and the ladder to get there. And a marathon is a great metaphor for life. And I think a marathon, somebody can't just walk the next day and do it. It just, if you want to achieve it to the best that you can, you're going to be sore, you're going to be hurting. But regiments and training, action day in, day out, or three times a week or four times a week, and manage your workforce on when you're going to do it, have a plan, and to achieve those goals, you were able to, you know, have kind of like see the progress also. When you have a goal, you're working weekly or monthly toward it, it's pretty evident that the progress will, you will see the progress, and it builds self-confidence. When you build self-confidence, you will achieve those goals. And sometimes you, the first time, and some other times you may need to get second and third try, but eventually you should be able to achieve close to your goals, maybe not all your goals, but close enough.
Okay, I want to talk to you about a new sponsor right here, Hydro. I love what they're doing. They are awesome. I don't know if you're into rowing like I am. I really enjoy it. What I try to do is I try to move around different cardio exercises. Sometimes on a bike, sometimes I'm rowing, sometimes I'm outside. But when I want to row, they've got it dialed in. They've done something fundamentally different than all the other rowers. One, it's not this loud machine that is making a ton of noise and, you know, chains slapping all over the place. They've done this in a really slick, premium, elevated way. And then the other thing they've done is that there's a nice screen that you can have a guide or a coach with you. And their coaches are Olympians and world-class athletes. And what they've done is they're filming, full stop, they are filming all over the world on places where their experts are rowing, and then you get to go with them. And they're coaching you the whole way. I love it. My favorite coach by far is Mac. She's great. And I just want to encourage you to give them a shot. If you love rowing, I think you're going to love this machine. And if you're not into rowing, I don't know if you know this, but rowing, there's been some research around rowing that rowing engages over 80% of your muscles while you're doing it. So it's a really efficient exercise. This spring, join the growing rowing community at Hydro. Head over to hydro.com and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400 off your Hydro. That's hydro.com, HYDROW.com, and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400. Hydro.com. Use the code MASTERY. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AG1. It's really important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality. And that's why for almost a decade now, I've been drinking AG1. When I first was connected with them, I thought, oh, this is great. This is great. And then I double-clicked to understand their process and how they went about it. And I just love the rigor that goes into what they're creating and the product that they have. And they've gone through so many iterations to get it just right, 52 of them to be exact. Sometimes quality can be a buzzword, but they are committed. They are fundamentally committed to have a great product for us. They're interested in absorption. They're interested in high quality manufacturing. They rigorously test their product. So I trust what's in AG1. And one of the reasons I have extra confidence in that statement is they are NSF certified for sport. That's one of the most rigorous independent quality and safety certification programs in the supplement industry. They've made it so easy as well. What I do every morning is I take a scoop, put it into a cup of water, shake it up, and it's the first thing that I put in my stomach. And I love it. It just gives me the sense like, okay, I've invested in my health and I haven't even started my day yet. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, I want to encourage you to go check out AG1. So try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/findingmastery. Again, that's drinkag1.com/findingmastery. I hope you go check them out. When you set goals, like when you get down into the weeds and the art of it, are you setting goals that are more in your control or goals that are more outcome-based?
Well, a little of both. Sometimes you can control, but at the same time, when you're running, they're more outcome-based because you're like, okay, I'm going to have run 10 miles and I want to do it in this. You know, you can't control how – you can control how hilly or where you go and things like that, but you can't control the wind or what kind of cars are in front of you. So you have to have the management of both and say, hey, I want to go to this area and this is my first 10-mile tempo that I'm going to do. That means race pace. I'm going to go for it and I might hit 51 minutes, but eventually you got to work it to 49 minutes. So, and you can look at it when you hit 50, 57, and you can say, you know what? I am half, you know, you can look at the glass half full or half empty instead of saying, oh, I did, you know, I didn't hit my 49. It depends what time in the season you're in and say, hey, I'm at the beginning. This is my first one. And then by the third one, I want to hit in the 49s or 49:30. So you have to be able to make just attainable goals.
Yeah. So who taught you this? Because it seems super natural, like it's a organic language for you about how you organize your thinking. And so did you learn it organically and or did someone help you, you know, through this?
Oh, I think I read a lot about autobiography. So I have parents who kind of preach those things, but also I had coaches that have seen me over the years. But then when it comes to academics, you know, the athletic teaches you so many things that, you know, you kind of become a second nature to you. But I think coaches and parents and teammates, you know, you get that energy and say, hey, I one time I was probably not as confident, but other people saw what I was able to do. They even in high school, people would say, hey, we'll see you at the Olympics. You're going to make the Olympics. But I'm like, I don't know if I can make it. People say, don't forget the small people. You're going to win the medals. We'll see you on TV. I'm like, no, I just want to get my degree. So because the priority was in academics, but as you grow as humans and with age and wisdom, things start clicking and you're like, oh, they were right. But some people can see your vision and they're there to nurture you, whether it's coaches or parents or mentors.
Okay. So that's interesting because UCLA, one of the great athletic powerhouses as an institution, and you were inducted into the Athletic Hall of Fame. Was that a goal or was that a byproduct of you focusing on other goals?
Michael, that was a byproduct. Going to UCLA, I was just, can I get in? You know, you didn't think about those things, you know, it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to be Hall of Famer by any means. It's just, can I get to UCLA and, can I get a scholarship? And when you get a scholarship, you're like, okay, I want to be the top guy on the team. You're not even thinking about longevity. Okay. One of the top guy on the team, you want to be the top guy in the, at the time was conference big, Pac-10, you know, I want to win Pac-10. Once you win Pac-10, I want to qualify for NCAAs. When you qualify NCAAs, you said, okay, I'm a freshman. I just got to finish in the NCAA and get All-American. You're not thinking winning, but eventually when you get All-American, you think, okay, maybe by junior year or senior year, I will win. And my coach, Bob Larson, and he was aboard on that. He would say, you're a freshman. You don't need to have the pressure on you now as a freshman and sophomore, but by junior and senior year, you chase people now, but by the time you're a junior and senior, people will be chasing you. So your priorities are up on the right path. But at the end of the day, I never thought I'd get inducted to the UCLA Hall of Fame. You know, you have so much to like, whether it's John Wooden, Bill Walton, Jackie Robinson. I mean, so many, you know, Troy Aikman and so many other, you know, Rafer Johnson and other great track athletes, Jackie Joyner Kersee. You think when I was going there, I just, well, let me just be the best student athlete I can be. And then you see John Gardena or Amy Acuff, who were on the cover of Track and Field, like, well, they got their high jumper and shot putter or auto ball in the 100 meter. I said, I want to be the distance runner for them. I want to be a standout. So you have those goals, but never ever thought I would be inducted to the Hall of Fame. Those are something that come by pass or down the road. And same thing with the San Diego Hall of Fame. I just, you know, got inducted this year. But you think, okay, I just want to make to the luncheon. You know, I want to be athlete of the month. You know, you become athlete of the year eventually. And, you know, especially knowing the background where I grew up, I didn't have TV. I didn't see TV. And I didn't even know running was a sport. But by accident or by default, I end up there. And I'm just grateful for all the great accomplishment that I have achieved. And it was through the mercy of God that allowed me to do that. And also a lot of great people helping you pave the path to be the best that you can be.
You know, it is, again, I'm going to say this, like listening to how you organize your thoughts, it's really structured. And you've got gratitude, you've got a spiritual framework, you've got community, you've got hard work, you've got clarity of goals. And it sounds like on those goals, the way you organize your inner life is that you're just trying to stretch yourself enough to see maybe I could. And it, that in and of itself inspires you just to almost climb the next hill, if you will. And I bet when you run and you're at the edge of capacity, you're tired, you're fatigued, you're in that kind of special space where adaptations are taking place. If you set small little targets in your own mind, like, okay, I'm going to keep this pace to the next trash can or the next light or the next whatever. Do you organize your thoughts that way during, you know, actual running?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think I do a lot of visualization and training, and then hopefully it becomes a second nature when I'm racing.
Tell me about the imagery that you do.
So the visualization that I do is, you know, I want to make it then, you know, if you do an 8 mile tempo or 10 mile tempo, you don't take the whole 10. You think, okay, I just want to make it to 3 mile, and the 3 miles at this pace, and I want to pick it up into mile six. Once you make it mile six, okay, I feel good. I think I can maintain this pace. Let me get down to mile eight. And then, oh, wow, I just got 2 more miles. I'm going to hammer the next 2 miles. So you also visualization the race, how the race is going to unfold. You know, I had a dream that I would win New York City Marathon. I had a dream that I would win New York Boston Marathon at times. Or I did not have that dream when I won the silver medal. That was early on. The Olympics. But yeah. You have those increment of goals. And then when you it was actually happening, you, like to your credit, you say, I just want to hold on with this group for as long as I can. Or I want to make it the next block. Don't lose confidence in the next block. Just keep charging. And then at one point, you know, like the London Olympic Games, I was struggling. And it was my third Olympics. I didn't make the 2000, 2004, where I won silver. I missed 2008 due to an injury. In the 2012, I already signed up for New York City Marathon. Things were not going well. My goal were to be top three or top 10, but I was 21st place. And I'm like halfway through, I was almost finished. I was not having a great day. And I'm like, you know what? I should just stop and get ready for the New York City Marathon. But I thought, you know, I'm wearing the USA jersey. I'm at the Olympics. How many people would love to be in my shoes? I have my daughters, my wife, my parents, my sibling at the finish line. And I got to get a finish line somehow, some way. And, quitting is not my best. I got to tell that to my daughters, and I better live by it. So you think those things in the race, and I pray to get the second group. Once you get the second group, you say, maybe I will beat one person. Maybe I will beat two people. And then all of a sudden, you are 15th place. And then you said, well, maybe I could be the champion of this group. You know, you have those mindset goals. And then eventually you're like, okay, I'm top 10. And before you know it, with 5K, you are sixth place. And the positive thing of the mind is huge, because once you decide you're going to go to that finish line, you might not, you know, I wasn't thinking I was going to pass people. I thought I was going to finish 50th. But before I know it, I was in sixth place with 5K left. And then I'm like, well, keep pushing. And I see a guy that had hit the wall with 2 miles left. And I said, if we catch that guy, you know, even if some of them get drug tested and one of them gets tested positive, you can be with the guy that's getting the bronze. So get to that fourth place. So you keep talking to yourself. And amazingly, I came in fourth place. And what a wonderful attribute that is, because being in the moment, overcoming obstacles, overcoming challenges, and that fourth place, yes, I didn't win a medal, but that taught me how to challenge myself, be in the moment, don't give up. And that opened a big door for me to be able to be invited to the Boston Marathon the year after.
So that was 2012, right? Yep. And so when I hear that, it's like, oh, you went into deep waters and you bit down, you kept fighting for it. But it's really that skill of self-talk, which is like, it's two skills, self-talk with very concrete goals, which you practice both of them. And so they were available for you when it got hard.
Absolutely. Yeah. You got to, you know, have a dialogue within yourself, because you know what, you know, you're mile eight, you know, mile 15, you know, you have 11 more miles to go, but you can't sprint it. You got to think, I got 11 miles. So I got to push it hard, but not enough to the wall. Just maintain the pace. Once you do that, it's like, okay, I guess the next mile you might see your watch and, oh, it's not as bad as I thought it would be. I'm still within my range, and I still got 10 miles to go. So you kind of measure yourself and have self-dialogue internally, and also not exhausting yourself. So, and then having those goals that, hey, I want to run with this group. I want to catch the next group. Just keep pushing. And that's what I say. We run to win. It doesn't mean get first place, but getting the best out of yourself with the situation you are dealt with.
I love it. And what are you driven by? What is it? Is it to be your best? Is it that simple? Is that what you're driven by? Or is it something
artistic? Yeah. It's driven to be the best that you can be, but also driven not to fail. I mean, failure is the last resort of option, you know. But I when I was running in high school, I want to make sure I get my degrees, because I see a lot of people who are homeless, or I don't want to be end up there or have mistakes in my life. I want to take my seriousness to education, and you know, and then eventually as a runner, it's like, okay, push yourself to the best that you can with the situation you have. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but they each teach you lessons, and you write down the lessons of how to improve the next time. Whether you, if you win, obviously it's always simple, you're on cloud nine. But if you don't, then you said you get third place or fourth place, but you didn't have the ideal training, and you say, you know what, if I could change this and that, I could come back and be a stronger person, and then I could finish in the podium or win it. And that, like I talk about in my book, 26 Marathons, what I have learned through faith, identity, and running and life. The 2005 New York City Marathon, I had a ruptured quad in August. I have to walk first before I can jog. After jogging, I have to run, and then I have to measure just right in training, make sure I get the sideline healthy, even though I was not prepared the best that I can. But I end up getting third place to the defending champion and the world record holder. And I said, you know what, if I can stay healthy, and my coach agreed with that, if you can stay healthy, imagine what you could do. And that third place kind of gave me hope that I am capable of winning the New York City Marathon. And obviously happened 4 years later. But, you know, you believe, sometimes when you don't win, you learn a lot as well.
Do you actually keep a journal?
I do keep training log. I have all my training log from 1993 all the way to 2010 or 11 probably. And then I did keep a journal in the past when I was in college, but not as much. Once computer got invented, I didn't do them. But when I used to travel for cross country or track meets, I used to write down what's going on in my head. So that helped. It was easier to write the books that I wrote, Run to Overcome and Metaphor Mortals and the 26 Marathon. So it became a hand. The Van Camps, who are my mentor that I talk about, Run to Overcome, they kind of introduced me to that.
Okay, so if we were to push all of the words or statements that you wrote down in your journals, either written or via computer, what would be the statements that would come out as the most frequent things that you said?
I would say probably challenges situations, you know, whether it's a relationship, whether it's academic, whether it's just teamwork. You always find challenging situation happening in life and in those situations. So for me is overcoming adversity, language barrier, trying to be proud son, trying to be a proud student, trying to be a proud student athlete. So all those entails to happy drive, you know, having a cause or having a cause, why you doing what's your purpose on this earth? You know, to be a student athlete. Once that chapter is closed, to be the best professional athlete that I can be. Once that closed, try to be a good dad, trying to be a good husband. But everything had a kind of timeline for me.
So your purpose changes over time based on the activities that you're doing?
Absolutely.
Okay. And then underneath the activities, what would you imagine your purpose to be? Meaning there's like the mechanical part of like, okay, my purpose is to be the best father. That's super important, obviously. And then underneath of it, like, what is your life purpose overall?
Well, I think that my life purpose overall was the significance of the Boston victory for me. My wife always said this bigger, you know, when we drive from San Diego to Mammoth, we have a dialogue and say, you know, you have the pedestal for being a runner, but your work to your talent is beyond running, you know. And for me, I think winning the Boston Marathon, it was lucrative, but what was that day, the year after the bombing, having to carry the victim's name on my bib to draw inspiration and have a purpose? when I won that, it was greater than myself. It was great for the community. God had just, you know, planned it out for me to be able to do that. It's not for lack of trying. I tried it multiple times. But that day, it gave me a great gratification that I was on this earth for a purpose of inspiring people and encouraging people and draw inspiration from them and teach them what to be to get the best out of themselves. Not just for me, I got the best out of myself in terms of running, but there's more work to be done about encouragement and inspiration of others.
You know, when we take a look at the common themes for people that report having purpose, there's three themes that emerge. One is that it matters to you. So you can't do somebody else's purpose, right? Somebody else can't give you meaning. It's got to matter to you. It's got to be bigger than you. And it's got to have some sort of future orientation, meaning it's down the road a little bit. And it sounds like you have all three of those. Right? Like it was, you know, and so it's not lost on me that it'd be easy to say you live a purpose-driven life, you know, that you've got deep purpose in your life.
You know, Michael, I think having a goal is important. Having a purpose is very important. And at the same time, bigger than yourself is, you know, whether I was the first, you know, college student to go with my, you know, my parents didn't have college degrees, so my two older brothers were the first one to get college degrees. So it was a bigger purpose. It's like, well, they didn't have this opportunity. That not that I was living for them, but I know it's going to provide a better opportunity for me and my family. And also just running. I mean, running, you help inspire others. You just have this idea that when I go run, sometimes I don't feel like going running, and people see you. Oh, great to see you here. It's awesome that you ran and you inspired us. You know, sometimes it's about pitfalls. You know, when you have a pitfall, you encourage others, you know, without knowing you, they read about you and they hear about you and says, hey, I was having a tough day and you encouraged me to get out of the door. You inspired me to do a marathon. I know if you, I don't have to win, but I can finish a marathon. So being a runner is pretty evident for me that, you know, you run to people who you have touched, even though you didn't realize you were doing it.
Finding Mastery is brought to you by Apollo Neuro. By now, you're probably well aware that I am a huge fan of what they're doing. I love what they're building and how they're using science-backed technology to help people flourish. This is just a great technology that isn't measuring something. It's actually providing a state change for you to help you either downregulate, find a deeper sense of calm, maybe fall asleep a little bit easier. And if you want to be bit more up and animated, they've got a way to help you do that as well. It's awesome. It works by sending silent, soothing vibrations. They call them Apollo vibes, of course. That's fun. And it's like music that you can just feel. Just like music, higher vibrations help improve your energy and focus, while lower vibrations, slower vibrations, help to reduce stress, help you relax. I use it twice a day. I use it after I do something really intense. So after it's a lift, after some fitness, after some sport, or after something I'm doing in the office. And I use it right before I go to bed. The science that they've found is fascinating. Across various real world and clinical trials, Apollo wearable users experience up to 40% less stress and feelings of anxiety. That's an average, of course. 19% more time in deep sleep, 11% increase in HRV, heart rate variability, and up to 25% more focus and concentration. Those are radical. And because you're a part of the Finding Mastery community, you're going to get an exclusive, and I mean that word here, 15% off an Apollo wearable. So just head to apolloneuro.com/findingmastery and use the code FINDINGMASTERY at checkout. This is an exclusive offer only available to Finding Mastery. I love that we get to do this together. So be sure to use our code. Again, APOLLONEURO, apolloneuro.com/findingmastery, or use the code Finding Mastery at checkout for 15% off your purchase. You're only getting that here. I really hope you'll check them out. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AquaTrue. We all know how important hydration is to performance and recovery and well-being. But it's not just about how much you drink. The quality of your water plays a big role. And if you're like me and you don't fully trust tap water, and I think for good reason, research by the Environmental Working Group has shown that 3 out of 4 homes in the U.S. have harmful contaminants in tap water. That's why I'm really excited to introduce AquaTrue. Their purifiers use a four-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters. It's incredible. I can literally taste the difference in my water. Plus, the filters are affordable and long-lasting. Just one set of filters from their classic purifier makes the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. That adds up to less than 3 cents per bottle. It feels great to know that all at once, I'm saving money, getting the highest quality water for the Finding Mastery team, and helping make a positive impact on the environment by eliminating single-use plastics all the way around. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and it even makes a great gift. And right now, because you're a Finding Mastery listener, you receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. So just go to aquatrue.com. You spell it AquaTru.com and enter the code Finding Mastery at checkout. Again, that's aquatrue.com. Enter the Finding Mastery code at checkout to receive 20% off any purifier that you buy there. When I think about how you've helped so many people, you've oriented your life for purpose and meaning and trying to find your very best on a regular basis, even when it's hard, you know, like that's a really important part of it. I want to hit the faith thing here in a minute because you've mentioned it four times, so I know it's a significant part of your framework. However, before we get there, with your intensity, with your relentless commitment to finding your best, what has been the hardest part or the dark side of being an elite athlete or somebody who is relentless? I'll go back to the word, relentlessly dedicated to improvement. What has been the hardest part of that for you?
Two things come to mind. 2008 Olympic trials, which was held in November 07. For the 2008 Olympics, that was devastating, but mentally, physically, emotionally, because I didn't make my Olympic team. I was a favorite to win the Olympic trials, but yet I finished eighth place, and in top three, you go to the Olympics. Anything below that, you don't. And mentally and emotionally, I was devastated. And then to have a friend of mine, Ryan Shea, who passed away, that even put in more perspective, devastation at a new level. But other time that have happened is probably 2011 when I didn't have a shoe contract. You think after winning a silver medal and winning New York and you're going to be, but Nike decided that they don't want to be part of my journey at that point. And I was devastated. I mean, you can't get lower than that, you know, in terms of running. But you think the purpose, well, we talked about what's your sense of purpose, you know, God created me on this earth to be a part of running. They gave me the gift of running. Is that maxed out? For me, that was a purpose. Did I tap out my maximum talent? And I know I didn't. There was more in the tank that I can prove to myself and others. And I overcame those challenges. Thank you to Skechers for allowing me to be able to give me a second life and then to be able to move, come over that and, you know, make two Olympic team and then win the Boston and all those things. So never give up hope. You know, hope is everything. And if you have hope and goal futures, you will achieve those things. But, you know, you need to surround yourself with good people and knowledgeable people. And life is a journey. And, you know, I'm learning that now in the real life, how challenging life can be and curveballs. But, you know, when you're doing a sport, now you can't solve everything, but you can have understanding that you got to be patient, you got to work hard, you got to be resilient, not give up.
And when you think about your religion or your faith or your spiritual life, I think you said God. So you are deity-based in your framework?
Yeah, I'm God faithful, God-based.
God-based. And is your God, your relationship with God, is it an active God or a passive God? And an active God is like God puts you in particular places or experiences or gives you particular gifts for certain aims, and then it's up to you to maximize them, those opportunities. Or passive God is like, hey, listen, you got your genetic coding. I put this whole thing in place, and you know, I hope you figure it out.
I think I have to say active God, because like a visualization, you know, you have visualization for races, and you have a relationship or dialogue with God. I mean, every morning you wake up, you are thankful for able to just wake up when you did wake up without alarm, you know. And when I'm training, I have dialogue with, you know, when I was training for the Boston Marathon and many other races, it's like God helped me to make this dream come true. And yeah, do I do the cross when I finish the race? Absolutely. But I've been doing that like probably 7 or 8 or more times when I'm training, you know, because, when you have a dialogue and it says, you know, you put me on this earth for a purpose, you know, I want to be able to, you know, when there's nobody watching, there's only deers or you see one human being in the 20-mile run you do. But, you know, yeah, thankful for the opportunities and for the nature that God has created. And you say, you know what a blessing I'm in Mammoth Lakes. What a blessing I'm in San Diego. What a blessing that I'm able to do the things, not just for myself, but for others. Because, you know, you have relative friends or acquaintance who can do the things you are doing. So you have a purpose to do that. And you're like, you know what, help me achieve those goals, not only for myself, but for others. So, you know, you have constant dialogue. And I would like to say I have a good relationship with God and an active one at that.
There you go. Okay. And then in that vein, like, how do you get in your own way? What is it that you do when, for whatever reasons that things are in your life, how do you amplify that or make it worse? How do you get in your own way is the simple way to ask that.
Oh, I mean, I think when you are, you think you can control it. Sometimes a bit running, it's like, okay, I can go 4 or 5 minute pace for this. And, you know, you have to be, sometimes it comes easy and other times it doesn't. And, you know, you think you control it and you dedicate it and you persevere. But at the same time, you know, if you are not humble, some things, if you take things for granted, some things can be taken away from you. And it's going to happen in a snap of a finger, whether it's our health, whether it's the injury that I have encountered. And you know what, when that happens, like the 2008 Olympic trials, you know what, you are, every time you get a chance to run again, you have an appreciation for God's grace and you have an appreciation for the people that help you get to the starting line healthy. So, you know, when you are, you know, sometimes you can be a little bit too confident. You know, I think I can do it. That's probably part of it. Not I didn't think I was that confident, but I mean, some things, oh, I'm having the best summer of my career. I think I can make the team. I think I want to win the gold. Well, first you got to make the Olympic team, you know, and how to get there. It's not like by working too hard, you got to trust in the system that you have got you to the finish line before that and do well instead of just work, and then you burn yourself out.
Mm. Is there a word that cuts to right to the center of what you understand most in life?
What I understand most in life?
Yeah.
Well, I think I would say patience. I think patience, understanding others. I have to try to be, you know, faith. I'm a faith-based person. You know, it doesn't happen overnight, but if you have faith and you have hope, those things can overcome joy, and you can you know, love what you do. I mean, if you love what you do, it's a lot more easier versus, you know, got to do this. I don't like to be got to do this kind of situation.
It sounds like you're so intense. I would actually imagine that would come up. But, you know, hearing you say that is refreshing. It feels like there's more space inside of your psychology, if you will, that you're an agent in your own life, like you're choosing, you know, right? Because I could create a narrative where you're really intense and driven and, you know, you just grind and put in the work and, but there's more space inside of you.
But then, you know, I think that's what, you know, I believe in preparation is the key to success. You can't say, oh, I'm going to run a marathon, I'm going to win and sitting down. But you put where your mouth is, you know, you do the drills, so you do the action, and then come race day, it's like, hey, may the best man, may the best woman, if they beat me, they beat me. I have no problem with that. But I'm willing to work hard in preparation. And then once you do that, especially on a 26.2-mile journey, you know, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. And it's gratifying when you hit it out of the ballpark. But at the same time, there's more losses than wins. So, and others are trying to do the same thing. So you have to respect the distance. You have to respect your competitors and have an appreciation for it.
And how bad is drugs right now in track and field? You know, is it in a good place? Is it at an all-time low? Like where are drugs in track and field right now?
Fortunately, they're not all-time low. There's people getting... I thought, you know, in the past, maybe I was naive, but everybody did it clean. But unfortunately, that's not the case. So there's a lot of people who are cheating. And it's really unfortunate because, like I said earlier, if you work hard, you deserve to win, you know, or if I outsmart you, I deserve to win. But unfortunately, or the Olympic Games or others, and I myself have gone the short end of the stick. I think it was 2013 half marathon U.S. championship. there's a guy named Mo Trafay who beat me, and I was runner up. I didn't have that title, you know, and could be invited back to those races and things like that. But cheaters will, it will get caught just no matter when.
And did you ever, like, how does it work? Did somebody ever in your life say to you, hey, if you really want to crack that time, I've got something that'll help? Or
I don't know. All I know is I'm clean and I've done it clean. But I don't know how that works. I mean, like I said, I'm very naive into that area because that's why I went to Mammoth Lakes, where you have to be at altitude to train your body. And you can't leave. You can't see your family for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, maybe 5 weeks, because the red blood that you build. But then there's obviously, I learned that there's a shorter way. But I never really been approached. There was one person that says, hey, what's your blood profile like and whatnot? But that's the extent of it. And I said, you know, I'll go check up a doctor every 6 months or once a year. I do my physical checkup. That's all I knew. I'm okay with that. But if he or she, he was hinting something else, I didn't get it right away, to be honest. Because for me is do it naturally, do it the best you can, and the rest will take care of stuff. And I got lapped, you know, I have gotten lapped at the world championships and the 10K and things like that. I only have 3 big wins, and a silver medal and second places, but at the 26 marathons, only 4 or 5 stand out. But you know, I got my share of defeats, but I'm okay with that because it makes you stronger the next time.
Can you walk through, like, or remember a particular point in time or an experience that you had where you didn't know if you had what it took?
Oh, absolutely. I think it was 2000 Olympics. I'm just first time qualified for my Olympics. My dad think you're going to win tonight. It was Sydney, Australia. It was a lot of flu that was going around. I had the flu. I qualified, and my dad said, you're going to win tonight. I said, Dad, I can't win tonight. He's like, what do you mean? You got to think positive, Dad. I'm like, can't win tonight. I have not broken 28 minutes. And the guys that I'm competing, they have run 26:30. I just hope I didn't get lapped, you know? And I don't know if I had that, but I knew. I told them the same conversation, Dad, maybe down the road I will win, but tonight is not possible, you know? But you have to be realistic. I mean, but I hope to train. And, you know, a year later, I improved. I did the first time I did altitude training, I shaved off 40 seconds of my PR, you know, and altitude training, not having a prelim, ideal weather, ideal pacing. It can happen. It can improve in the 10K. And then that's still my personal best ever. You know, it's not like I got better than that following. I tried, but I got within 7 seconds. So consistency is important, because we are the same people. But if you see people up and down, left and right, and different kind of results, then you have to be skeptical.
Okay. Brilliant. I mean, it is so clear to me why you're successful. I mean, it's, you know, you're really concrete in the way that you approach growth. And what are your relationships like with your family members?
Oh, I mean, I think my relationship is good, I would like to think, but at the same time, I've been so dedicated to my sport. I missed out a lot on birthdays or ceremonies or graduations and things like that. And I even missed a White House visit because I was getting ready for New York 2004. So there's opportunity that come, but at the same time, there've been priorities. My running took a lot of priority, and I'm grateful for my wife allowing me to do that. And you know, being an athlete, it's not like you can come back 10 years later and say, let me try it again. You know, there's ample opportunities. And I think I feel like I've capitalized on that. But also, you know, I'm a father now, I'm a husband, and I have siblings that I wish I could do more time. Sometimes I can't get the time back, but I try to enjoy it in the process now and as much as I can.
Okay, how about this? Pressure comes from just kind of quick hits. Where's pressure come from?
Pressure comes from yourself, you know, because fear of failure kind of help you put more pressure on yourself.
And failure is defined by?
Trial and error.
Okay. So what is failure?
Failure is not achieving the goals that you set to get. And that doesn't mean you can never retain them again. It's just like, it's an error.
Okay. How about this? It all comes down to?
all comes down to be the best you can as an individual. And if you are individually working for the better of the family or for the better of the team, everybody wins.
Success is?
I like to quote that from John Wooden, a peace of mind knowing that you're the best you can be.
You are a UCLA graduate. Okay. Love.
Ooh, that's a tough one. We're going through that, my wife and I, right now. Love is, you know, I'm learning that it putting others before yourself. Love is pursuing your passion and, you know, be kind to each other and be supportive of each other.
How about this? My vision.
My vision is be realistic. You know, there's imaginary stuff, but that's not it. But be realistic, you know, and that's what I think marathon had taught me. You can't go to mile 17 before you say 14, 15, and 16. So you have a vision of what you can, it's going to look like, but vision is also come to reality.
Okay, how about this last little one here?
I am a champion. I am a father. I'm a husband. I am grateful for the life that I have.
All makes sense. There's nothing out of place for you. It's great. Okay, like if what do you hope the next generation gets right?
Well, the next generation, I hope they are away from the iPads and computers and all that. I think, you know, I grew up with interacting with people. So the humanity of it, the best about humanity is touching, feeling, and communicating, having a dialogue. But more and more, we're getting away from that through email, text, and not making phone calls or not being in presence of people. And with automated grocery stores, self-checkout, I'd rather say to somebody, I always, as much as I can, maybe once or twice I've done the auto checkout, self-checkout, but I always go to the people, say, hey, how you doing? How's your day? Or thank you at the end of the checkout and stuff. So be human, you know, be in touch with nature and with humans.
Right. Brilliant. Last question is, how do you think about, define, or articulate the concept of mastery?
The mastery is, to be able to have a path of you're going to interact with others. And I think, if I'm not sure if I'm defining it right, but to be in place and time when there's others who are in need of you.
You're a special human, aren't you?
Yeah. That's very kind of you to say, but no, yeah. I mean, we are humans, we make mistakes, but you know, we try to learn and be supportive of each other.
That's awesome. It's refreshing to hear you speak about how you've become and the mission that you're on. And just a final parting question is, actually two, if you don't mind. One is, have you found what you're searching for?
Whew. What you're searching for, I'm a goal person. I like to write things down or have a dialogue. I mean, right now, for my purpose of searching out, it has been my career to pursue the best that I can be, and with the support of my coach, my agent, brother Howie, and Coach Larson, and my wife Yordanos, and there've been many other people who helped me in the stepping stone to get there. There's a team behind a team, but right now in the middle of transition of what's the next big purpose. I have a foundation, the Med Foundation, Maintex Unbalanced through health, education, fitness. I'm trying to do that. But, you know, I want to be the best dad that I can. I'm not the greatest dad, but I try to be a good dad. That's good enough for me. But I ask the girls what they want me to do. What is their, you know, what do you expect of me, you know? Because some of them by simple as watching a movie, or some might be biking a ride, or some going for a run. And so I'm trying to get to know them and try to have a relationship with them. But purpose is just to write it down and see if you can make improvement. As a humans, we have pride in making and learning every day a progress to something good.
Awesome. Okay, last one before I ask where people can find you and get into it is, if you were to sit down with somebody who is flat out world class, you know, world leading in what they do, who would that person be? And then what would you want to ask them if you only had one question?
Ooh, that's a tough question.
Dead or alive, it doesn't matter.
I would like to stay. I mean, I had a great honor to meet an amazing people, and I have asked them quite a bit of questions, from President Obama to President Jimmy Carter and President Bill Clinton and a few others. But, you know, my first athlete that my dad ever told me was Pele. I would love to know him and watch his movies, seen him, what significance he has done. And if he has to do one more thing, what would that be? Or if you have to do one thing over, what would that be?
Really? That's your question? That's cool. Yep. Yeah. Okay. And for you, how do you answer that question?
Because, I mean, you can read things. People can read out all our accomplishments and whatnot, but whether it's athletic, family, or other things, we always, you know, there might be one thing that is, whether it's family, that you would do all over again, or there is, you know, a race, or depends what, and then you will know what the priorities were.
Oh, that's really cool. Is that like you're trying to get at to what's haunting them? Like, what's the thing that keeps them up at night, or...
Yeah.
Is that what you're trying to get at? Yeah. Okay. So, your turn, Meb. What is it? What's the thing? I know mine. I'm happy to share mine. But like, what is the thing that you would do over again? Is that how you asked it?
Yeah. I mean, I think I would spend more, I guess, probably more time with the family, kids. And, you know, you can win races, have goals. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, you have... pushing yourself to the maximum in terms of athletic, but, you know, is that good enough? You always question that.
That's the thing that haunts me too, is this, the time commitment to explore the edges of a craft, like the sacrifice at home, it is high. And yes, that is the part that haunts me. And then to answer, if I was to, you know, just so we're sharing in that vulnerability, is that if I were to answer that, it was certainly about the mistakes I made in the selfishness that I had early in my relationships, my relationship with my wife. And like that, you know, as I say that, the other part of the conversation is, but, you know, getting through those times was necessary. It was important. We figured out a lot. We learned a lot. So I don't know if that's rationalization or if it's really is, you know, a way to figure things out together. It's just part of the path, but I appreciate your answers and I appreciate you and what you've done and what you stand for. So I just want to say thanks. And where can people find you?
People can find me at Ron Meb on Twitter or Instagram, and marathonmeb.com is my website. And encourage people to be the best they can and keep pushing forward.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And both books. So, you know, your first book, your autobiography.
Yeah, but there's Meb for Mortals, Run to Overcome, and 26 Marathons. Those are the training book, three. Autobiography.
Yeah, training book.
And one more.
There we go. Yep. Meb, thank you. What a legend.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay. All the best. Take care.
Bye now.
Okay. Bye. All right. Thank you so much for diving into another episode of Finding Mastery with us. Our team loves creating this podcast and sharing these conversations with you. We really appreciate you being part of this community. And if you're enjoying the show, the easiest no-cost way to support is to hit the subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening. Also, if you haven't already, please consider dropping us a review on Apple or Spotify. We are incredibly grateful for the support and feedback. If you're looking for even more insights, we have a newsletter we send out every Wednesday. Punch over to findingmastery.com/newsletter to sign up. This show wouldn't be possible without our sponsors, and we take our recommendations seriously. And the team is very thoughtful about making sure we love and endorse every product you hear on the show. If you want to check out any of our sponsor offers you heard about in this episode, you can find those deals at findingmastery.com/sponsors. And remember, no one does it alone. The door here at Finding Mastery is always open to those looking to explore the edges and the reaches of their potential so that they can help others do the same. So join our community, share your favorite episode with a friend, and let us know how we can continue to show up for you. Lastly, as a quick reminder, information in this podcast and from any material on the Finding Mastery website and social channels is for information purposes only. If you're looking for meaningful support, which we all need, one of the best things you can do is to talk to a licensed professional. So seek assistance from your healthcare providers. Again, a sincere thank you for listening. Until next episode, be well. Think well and keep exploring.